20. So I'm dedicated by Brother Aaron Tope, Zeke Nishmas Moshe, Ephraim Zipporah, Baby Hubitz, Hirsch. And we hope that in the merits of our time of Torah, the Shavu have an new parak. Ketzad Ma'avrin Es Ha'arin. How do you go ahead and Ma'avrin? I will say, we'll see, the Gemara is going to discuss the etymology of this particular word. But for now, what it means for us is, how do we extend the tchum of the city? Now remember, Abosai, we've been talking about the 2,000 amot tchum already for a while. But now what's interesting is, the question that Gemara is going to discuss is, we know that the tchum ends at the edge of the city. The tchum begins at the edge of the city, right? You have 2,000 amos from the edge of your city to go ahead and walk. So the shayla is now, how do we measure that edge? How do we measure that border? Right, so the Gemara uses the lashon of ketzad ma'avrin, which literally means, how do we extend the border of the city? We'll say, if you have your picture books, today is a good day. Today is a good day to use it. So the Gemara says, bayis nichnas bayis yotze. Now we'll say, what the Mishnah automatically contends with is, very often, the edge of the city, the border of the city, is not a straight line. So how do you deal with the fact, bayich nichnas bayis yotze, one house is in, one house juts out, or pogum nichnas pogum yotze. So we'll say this refers to towers. Often when a city would have a wall, so the wall would have towers, rounded towers. Sometimes the towers extend outwards, sometimes the towers extend inwards. You can see, I will say, if you're looking at the picture over here, so you can see some beautiful pictures here. That's really nice. So you have over here, on picture number 187, the idea that some houses extend in, some houses extend out, and 188, sometimes the towers extend out, the towers extend in. So the shayla is, again, how do you go ahead and measure the tchum in these circumstances? Or for that matter, hayusham gidudio. So both say, as we will see in the Gemara, essentially what we do is, we go ahead and we measure the tchum from the outermost point, from the point of the edge of the city that extends most outward. And we draw a line there in order to go ahead and extend the tchum to whatever degree possible. Or for that matter, hayusham gedudios gevohos asar tvachim. Or if you had ruins outside of the city, Rashi points out that are within 70 and two-thirds amos of the city. We'll discuss all this in the Gemara. That are 10 tvachim high. That's picture 189. You see the ruins over there. Top of Nun Gimel. Ugisharim unefashos. So Gisharim Abose are bridges. Nefashos literally are tombs. Now what this refers to, Abose, if you take a look, you could see there's a picture of this in picture 190. So apparently what often used to happen is cemeteries would have someone like a caretaker. Kind of like what you have today. Often you go to cemeteries, you'll see like it's an interesting piece of real estate, but there's often a house right on the grounds of the cemetery. So that's a caretaker. So same thing they used to have a caretaker who would live in a house by the cemetery. So the Mishnah over here is talking about this, or for that matter, you had a bridge that had a place to live for the toll collector. So in these particular situations, what the Mishnah is saying over here is, if let's say the cemetery was within 70 and two-thirds amos of the city, which we'll discuss that measurement, so the tchum of the city actually is measured from the home of the caretaker of the cemetery and outwards. Or if the bridge is within 70 and two-thirds amos of the city and there's a home for the toll collector, you begin to measure the city's tchum, again, from the home, from the house of that toll collector. Sheesh ban beis dira, motzin es hamida kinegdan. So Rabbi is saying, all of these cases, we extend the edge, we extend the border at which the tchum begins from the outermost point. So Rabbi is saying, all of these cases, so if the towers extend outwards, so again, jut out, we go ahead and we draw the imaginary line from the outermost tower. If the homes extend in and out, we draw the imaginary line again from the outermost home. If the toll collector's house, the tomb house, bless you, the bridge house, the ruins are within 70 and two-thirds almost of the city, we begin to draw the line of the tchum, where the tchum begins from there. So the Gemara says, Os kinegdan va'osin osa kimin tavla mirubas. We'll say this goes back to what we saw in the last couple of days. And we go ahead and we essentially draw a square grid around the city. And I will say very often, now it doesn't have to be a square, we'll see. It just means we make it right angles. That's what it means. It could be a rectangle. But the point is, we draw right angles. We saw this already in previous days. So we draw the imaginary tchum around the city, and we round out, or I should say, we square off the angles of the city, the corners of the city at right angles. Kedei sheyehe niska es hazovios, in order that a person will benefit from the corner. So we'll say, you can see this picture over here. You can see the picture over here on page picture 191. It's actually a very good picture. I don't know if anyone has this one. What happened to all picture books? No, didn't we have 15 of them before? No, they're good. All right. Okay, so you'll see over here. You can look on page picture 191. You see over here the tome in the middle, and again, we essentially square it off. So as we saw already yesterday, you actually end up getting more than 2,000 amos. Because again, if you were to go in, let's say, the diagonal from the corner of the city all the way to the corner of the square, you would get 2,000 amos, of course, plus the amount of the zavis, the amount of the corner. Fine. Says the Gemara, Rav Ushmua, chad tani ma'avrin, v'chad tani ma'avrin. So we'll say Rav and Shmua had a machlokes. One said you should read the Mishnah Ma'avrin. One said you should read the Mishnah Ma'avrin. So Arshti Ma'avrin. So Rabbi says, so what's the chilik? The chilik is that one has an ayin, one has an aleph. So the Gemara says, what's the distinction? So the Gemara says, Man detani Ma'avrin, the one who says Ma'avrin with an aleph, Aver. Because what does it mean, Ma'avrin? It means that we make the city like appendages. What does it mean, Rabbi says? That if the city happens to have a protrusion, let's say it has an appendage, it has a house, or it has a tower that sticks out from the edge, that extends beyond the rest of the city, what do? Ma'avrin. We make other Eivarim, we make other appendages, i.e., we extend the tchum of the city. Uman da'amr ma'avrin, and the one who says ma'avrin with an ayin, ki isha ubra, like a pregnant woman. So I'll say, therefore, in the Mishnah begins, keitzed ma'avrin esayir, it means, how do we extend, just like the right pregnant woman, her stomach is extended, so again, how do we extend the boundary of the city? Okay, so Rabbi said, Rav and Shmuel aren't arguing, at least for now, in the mechanics, they're not arguing in any of the halacha, they're arguing now in the syntax, they're arguing in the text of the Mishnah. So now, Rabbi said, now once the Gemara opened up this door, so the Gemara uses this as a springboard to speak about a couple of other machloksin between Rav and Shmuel. So for example, the Gemara says, Marasa Machpela. What's the meaning of this statement, Marasa Machpela? And we'll say Marasa Machpela literally means the cave that is doubled. So the Gemara says, Rav and Shmuel dispute this. Chad Amar Shnei Batim Zelef Nimizeh. One says that it refers to a home that has two chambers, one inside of the other. If you actually take a look, Rashi actually has a picture of this. Right? Rashi says, you have the Pesach HaMa'ora, and then an outer chamber and an inner chamber. That's Marasa Machpela. The Chad Amar Bayis Va'aliyah Agabov. One says, no, Marasa Machpela means that there was an upper story to the cave and a lower story to the cave. Bishlam alaman damar zeh agav zeh. So according to the opinion, who holds that it was a two-story cave, hainu Machpela. They both say that fits much better with the Lashon of Machpela. Kafal means double. The Lashon there really works better with one on top of the other. Alaman damar shnei batim zelif nimizeh my Machpela. But according to the opinion, who holds that it means, again, one house or two chambers, one in front of the other. Why is it called Machpelah? Shekfula bezugos. Because it's literally doubled with couples. Because remember, again, there are couples, only couples are buried in Marasa Machpelah. Now that we said that, so the Gemara says, Mamre Kiryas Arba. So remember, the Torah calls Hebron, the place of the Marasa Machpelah, is Mamre, the city of the four. Amra Yitzchak Kiryas Arba Hazugos. It is the city of the four couples who are buried in Marasa Machpelah, and they are Adam and Chava, Avram, Sarah, Yitzchak, Rivka, Yaakov, Veleah. Okay? Now the Gemara goes on. Vahi, so we'll say all of these are machloksim between Rab and Shmuel. Vahi mei Amraphel. It was in the days of Amraphel. So we'll say here the Torah is talking about the war of the four kings against the five. So the Torah says it was in the days of Amraphel. So who is Amraphel? Rav Ushmuel. Rab and Shmuel debate this. Chad Amar Nimrad Shmuel. Nimrod Shmo, Velama Nikra Shmo Amraphel. So one say his real name was Nimrod. If his real name was Nimrod, then why was he called Amraphel? So the Gemara says, Shne'emar, Velama Nikra Shmo Amraphel, Shne'emar Vehipil, Shamar, Vehipil La Avram Avinu Besocha Kivshan. Because Amar, he said, and Hipil, he was the one who commanded that Avram Avinu, after not yielding to idolatry, should be thrown in the Kivshan Ra'eh, should be thrown in the fiery furnace. The Chad Amar Amraphel Shmo. Other one said, no, his name is Amraphel. The Lama Nikra Shmo Nimrod. Aye, so why is his name Nimrod? Shehimrid Eskala Olam Kulo B'malchuso. Because ultimately he led the entire world in a rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayakam Melech Chadosh Amitzrayim. So we'll say, fast forwarding to Shmos. Right, so at the beginning of Shmos, the Torah says that a new king arose upon Egypt. Ravu Shmua Chadamar Chadash Mamish. So Rav Shmuel debated this. One said literally a new king. The Chad Amar Shnis Chad Shukzerosav. And the other opinion said, no, it's not literally a new king. Same king, but what? New decrees. Man Da Amar Chadash Mamish. The one who says literally a new king. Dechsev Chadash. Torah says a new king. Uman Da Amar Shnis Chad Shukzerosav. And the one who says, no, it's not literally a new king, it's just rather new decrees. Midlok siv vayamos vayimloch. The Torah does not say that the previous king died and that the new one ascended the throne. Ulaman damashin is chachuk zerosav. Hak siv asher lo yada es Yosef. But according to the opinion who holds that it was not really a new king, but just new decrees. The Torah says that he did not know Yosef, which would seem to indicate what? That it was literally a new king. Maya asher lo yada es Yosef. What does it mean that he didn't know Yosef? The havi dummy. He made himself as if he did not know Yosef. But in reality, he did. I spent 18 days learning by Rabbi Yoshe Beribi. And out of those 18 days, I literally only learned one thing from our Mishnah, about our Mishnah. And what did I learn? The only thing I learned during those entire 18 days, right, 2.5 weeks, was what? That the way to read the Mishnah is Ketzad Ma'avrin, with an Aleph, like Aver, Aver. Okay. Ini, is that so? He only learned one thing. V'hama Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan said, Yudbeis Talmidim, Hayulo L'Rabbi Yoshia Beribi, that Rabbi Yoshia Beribi had 12 Talmidim, V'yud Ches Yom Kidalti Beinayim. Rabbi Yochanan said, I spent 18 days with them. I learned the heart of each of the students, and Rashi points out, Leiv kol echad ve'echad, kama haya mechudad, how sharp each of them were. Kilomar, bekulan hikarti macharifos yesh mizeloze. I learned about the sharpness, how the width of each of them. V'chachmas kol echad ve'echad. And I learned the wisdom of each of them. So what do you see from here? That Rabbi Yochanan learned a lot during those 18 days, right? He learned about the wit and the wisdom of each of the students, to which the Gemara says, Leiv kol echad ve'echad, the chachmas kol echad ve'echad. He learned all about the heart and the wisdom of all the students, Gemara lo gomer, but he didn't actually acquire any new knowledge. So for 18 days, he learned about the students, which I will say again, he learned the character traits, what made them unique, but he didn't learn any new halachas. Ipa, you see, the other possibility is, Minayhu didahu gamar, minay didei lo gamar. The other possibility is he learned a lot from the students, right? But he just didn't learn really anything except that one statement from Rav Oshia. Viba, you see, another possibility is davar echad b'mishnah seinu kamar. That what Rabbi Yochanan meant when he said I only learned one thing, what he meant is I learned one thing regarding our Mishnah, but perhaps I learned many other things over the course of my 18 days there. But I'm Rabbi Yochanan. I've also listened to this Gemara. This is so beautiful. Kishayinu ulomdim Torah eitz Rav Oshia. When we used to learn Torah by Rav Oshia, hayinu yoshvim arba ba'ama. Four of us would sit in an ama. And I will say, that's a lot of people in an ama, right? So an ama is not, but what he's saying is when we used to learn Torah from Oshia, we packed together so tightly in an effort to go in and hear the Rebbe's Torah. I'm a Rebbe. Kishayinu lomdim Torah eitz Rav Elazar ben Shamua. So Rebbe said, when we used to learn Torah from Elazar ben Shamua, Hayinu yoshim shisha ba'ama. Oh yeah? Yeah? I'll tell you, when we used to learn Torah, we used to go in and squeeze six, right? Six people to an ama. Right? I'm sorry? No, six people to an ama. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Oshia Beribi Bidoro, Kabi Meir Bidoro. So Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Oshia, Beribi Rabosai is an accolade. Beribi means the Rebbe. The Rebbe. So Rabbi Oshia, Rabbi Oshia, the Rebbe, Rabbi Oshia Beribi. Right, it literally means the great one. But in his generation, was like Rabbi Meir in his generation. Ma Rabbi Meir bedoro, lo yochlu chaverov. Lo yochlu chaver lamar al sof dato. Excuse me. So also, we've seen actually this before, that Rabbi Meir was so smart that he was able to argue both points in a convincing fashion. Now, wow, that's an incredible intellectual feat. It actually poses a little bit of a problem because often people were not sure of the halachic positions of Rabbi Meir. Because since he made such cogent arguments at both ends, it wasn't always clear what he actually held. But leaving that aside, the Gemara says that the same way in Rabbi Meir's generation, lo yochlu chaver lama losov dato, his friends really couldn't comprehend the full measure of his intellect. Af Rabbi Yoshia lo yochlu chaver lama losov dato. So to Rabbi Yoshia, his friends could not comprehend the full measure of his intellect. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, listen to how beautiful this is. It's so beautiful. Liban shal rishonim kipischo shal ulam. The hearts of the earlier generations was as large as the opening of the ulam. So we'll say this goes all the way back to our Erevin days, if you remember. So Rashi points out over here, Pesach shal ulam, the ulam itself was 20 amos high. Right? 20 amos high. So remember again, and the Pesach of the Kodesh was 10 amos high. So the Gemara says, the hearts of the earlier generations were like the opening of the ulam, referring to large and grand. V'shalachorim, and after them, their hearts were as large as pischo shel heichal, like the opening of the mikdash. Va'anu, but us, kimale nakav mechet sidkis. Our heart is like the opening of the eye of a needle used to mend torn garments, which is pretty small. Right, Shavuot said, the scary part is, and that's what they're saying about themselves, then we're in a little bit of trouble. Anu kimale nakav mechet sidkis. Rishonim Rabbi Akiva. So what's an example of the earlier ones, Rabbi Akiva? And what's an example? Achronim Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Ika da Amri, others say, Rishonim Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Others say the early ones he refers to are people like Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Achronim Rabbi Osha Baribi. Va'anu kimale nekev machad sitkis. And we are just like the hole, right, of a needle that's used to sew, to mend torn garments. Amra Abaye, va'anan ki sikhsa biguda ligimara. So Abaye comes along and says, you know what we're like? We're like forcing a peg into a wall when it comes to Gemara, when it comes to understanding things. Right? So what does that mean? So the image he's trying to paint, you have a small hole in the wall and a large peg. So you could get the peg into the wall, but what do you have to do? You mamish have to clap it, right? You got to keep hitting it. So it comes along Abaye, and Abaye says that Lamaisa, when it comes to Gemara, when he says Gemara, what he means over here is acquiring knowledge. Acquiring knowledge, understanding what it is that we learn. When it comes for us to understand what we're learning, what do you have to do? It's like forcing a peg into a small hole in the wall. Amar Rava, Rava says, Va'ana ki etz ba'asa bikira l'svara. We are like poking a finger in wax when it comes to svara. Right, when it comes to, if you look at Rashi over here, be'etzva v'kira, b'shava kasha, she'ina etzva yochel ikanis v'socha, ela midabek ma'at. We'll say, what is he saying over here? So Rava says, we'll say, if you have a block of wax, and you keep poking your finger into it, so what happens? Nothing. Nothing, right? Okay, over time, maybe you'll make an indentation. So Rava says, essentially, that we're a shtickle thick, right, when it comes to absorbing svara. When it comes to absorbing logic, sometimes we're like poking our fingers against wax. Mostly what he's trying to point out over here is that for whatever the reason, earlier generations seem to have had an easier time going ahead and absorbing knowledge. For us, it's a much more difficult thing. Also, just so you should know, it's actually very contemporarily relevant, because actually there are fascinating studies that are happening even now just with decreased attention spans. Right, that people have much more decreased attention spans. Just we pay attention a lot less longer. We pay attention for less time, right? And therefore, retention, the ability to retain information, is actually it's compromised in our present day society. There's a lot of reasons for that, but it's just fascinating over here that they're lamenting that same idea. They're like poking their finger against wax to get the sara in. Amar Rashi Anan ki etzba asa babir l'shichcha. But you're like sticking a finger into the pit for forgetfulness. What does the Bible say? That to stick your finger in a pit is pretty easy. In, out, in, out, in, out. The same way it's very easy, so too we very easily forget things. Amar Rav Yehuda. Amar Rav. B'nei Yehuda shekpidu al shonam niskaim utorasam biyadam. The people of Yehuda, a part of our so-called Yehuda, so because they were careful with how they spoke, they niskaim Torah. They were able to retain their Torah. Their Torah remained there. They didn't forget their Torah. B'nei Golil, shelo hekpidu al lashonam. The people of Golil who were not careful with how they spoke. Now, I will say, the way Rashi is understanding this over here, look now for a moment. Look at Rashi, shekpidu al lashonam. Ledaber belashon tzach. To speak in a pleasant way. Velo belashon neguna. And not to speak in a disparaging fashion. Kida Amrinon Lekaman Bebnei Galil. So amazing. So Bnei Yehuda, who were careful with how they spoke to speak in a pleasant way, retained their Torah. Bnei Galil, who were not careful how they spoke, lost their Torah. So the Gemara says, Midi Bikpeda Talia Milsa, really is retention of Torah dependent on how you speak? Ella, Bnei Yehuda de Daiki Lishna, Umisnich Ilisinda, Mis Kaima Torah Sambiyadon, Bnei Galil de Lo Daiki Lishna, Velo Misnich Ilhusimar, alone is Kaima Torah Sambiyadon. So the Gemara says, no, you're right, it's not really about manner of speech. What it is about being medactic with your words. In Yehuda, they were always careful to use precise wording, right? They didn't just say words. They always made sure that their words were meaningful. I don't mean that they didn't speak in mundane things. I mean, they were always careful to be explicit in what it is that they meant. So because of that, when it came to the learning of Torah, they were careful to always formulate ideas in the right way. And therefore, when they learned, it was more understandable. Furthermore, they made simanim. They made for themselves memory devices, right? Mnemonics or any other type of simon to remember their Torah. Bnei Galil did not do that, and therefore their Torah did not last. Bnei Yehuda, gamra mechad rabba niskama torasan. In Bnei Yehuda, people were makbid to take for themselves a Rebbe, one person to learn from. And therefore their Torah was niskama. And we'll say, why is that? Rashi points out, because remember, what happens if you have multiple Rebbeim? If you have multiple Rebbeim, this one says this one says that, you have this opinion, that opinion, this Rebbe formulates his ideas in one way, and the truth is, it becomes confusing. So in Bnei Yehuda, people took upon themselves, this is my Rav, this is my Rebbe, this is who I learned Torah from, and therefore l'maisa, the Torah was upheld. Bnei Galil de lo gamri mechad rabba, lo niskaima torasan, but Bnei Galil again, who had multiple Rebbeim, which was, again, at first glance, doesn't sound like a bad thing, and there are ways in which it's good, but at least for the learning of Torah, it makes things confusing, because again, different formulations, different ideas, and maybe even different positions, and therefore lo niskaima torasan biyadan. Ravina Amar, Bnei Yehuda de galu mesechta, niskaima torasan biyadan. Ravina says, Bnei Yehuda de galu mesechta, so we'll say, look at Rashi, the Galil Masechta, Lamdu La'achir. So Rashi brings out two possibilities as to what Galil Masechta means. Either it means they taught others. So Bnei Yehuda, they learned, but they didn't just keep their learning for themselves, they taught others. Or he writes, Lashon Acher, Mafarshin Shmaosein Umedaktikim Betamo Sheldavar. Or Galil Masechta means, literally, they revealed their learning, which is that when they learned, they made sure they understood what it was that they were learning, and were not happy with a superficial understanding. So again, either it means sharing, galu means reveal, they would reveal it to others, or they would reveal it to themselves to make sure they understood what they were learning. However, Bnei Galil, lo galu masechta, lo niskaima torasan biyadan, but in Bnei Galil, they did not clarify their learning, and therefore what they're learning did not stand, did not endure. David, galu masechta, Shaul, lo galu masechta. David HaMelech, when he learned, made sure, A, to go ahead and learn with others, to share his Torah learning, and number two, made sure to always understand what he was learning. Look at Rashi, David called him a sechta, last Rashi, Kitar Meseches Brachas, Shaya Yagea B'Torah Umora Horos. David HaMelech was always engaged in learning, and was always passing Shailas. Kida Amri Yodai Meluchleches B'Dam of Shafir V'Shilya, V'Orim B'Yoshes Rabbi Yafel Danti Yafel Zakisi, V'Amin HaMayim, oh fine. So the point is, David HaMelech was always involved in also teaching Torah to the masses, either through Piske Halacha or through teaching other forms of Torah. Shaul, on the other hand, was not involved in teaching the populace Torah. The Gemara says, David, the Galil Masechta Ksivbe, how do we know that David HaMelech was involved? David, who was involved in teaching Torah to the Klal, it says about him, quoting over here the Pasuk from Tehillim, Yirei Echa Yiruni, the ones who fear me, right? The ones who fear you will fear me. V'yismichu ki lidvarechi yichalti. And they will rejoice for me because for your words I always yearned. A reference to the fact that David HaMelech taught Torah to the masses. Shaul delo galim esechta, Shaul who did not teach Torah to the masses. Ksidbe, it says to him, El kol asher yifne yarshia. Everything he does will be evil. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, how do we know that God forgave Shaul for that sin? Now, what sin is he referring to over here? So Rashi points out, he's referring to the sin of the slaughter of Nob, Ir Kohanim. Right? Remember, we'll say, long story short, Shaul thought that Nob, the city of Nob, which was the city of Kohanim, was harboring David, who at this point in time was a fugitive. They were harboring David, but no one had any idea he was a fugitive. He was the son-in-law of the king. So the people, yes, city of Nob helped David. They thought he was on a mission from the king. So Shaul orders that the entire city of Nob be wiped out. One coin escapes. So how do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave Shaul for that sin? Shene'emar Machar, tomorrow, Ata Ubanecha Imi. Tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. And I will say, this refers to the episode where Shaul goes ahead and summons the spirit of Shmuel HaNavi. And Shmuel tells Shaul that tomorrow when you go out to war with the Plishtim, you're going to lose and you're going to die. You and your sons are going to die. But he says the message from God is, tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. So the Gemara darshins and the Lashon, you will be with me. What does it mean you'll be with me? Imi b'mechitzasi. You'll be with me within my mechitza, within my partitions, which is a way of saying, Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Shaul, I forgive you for that sin you committed. Amr Baba, So Rabbi Abbas, let's go back to what we started with. If it's true that Bnei Yehuda are so careful with their words, let's ask them the question from our Mishnah. So Lishni Ma'avrin Tanan, O Ma'avrin Tanan, why don't we ask the question from our Mishnah? How does the word Ma'avrin get written in the Mishnah? Should it be written with an Aleph like Aver, or should it be written with an Ayin like Ober? So furthermore, Akozu Tanan, O Akozu Tanan, do we write Akozu or do we write Akozu? So we're also not going to get into this right now, but Rashi points out that the Mishnah Bechoros talks about certain women, certain types of blemishes on an animal, and one of them has to do with an animal only has one testicle. So that there are no pictures in the back. So now the Gemara talks to the Mishnah about, is this a woman? How do you check it? Sometimes apparently, I don't understand the science of it or the biology, but sometimes apparently the testicle itself could send, what is
it? It's called undescended testicle.
Undescended testicle. Good. So the Mishnah talks about how there are ways that you could check for it. So again, apparently, the way you have to do is you have to position the animal in a certain way. So akuzu is the name of the position for the animal. So is it akuzu with an aleph? Is it akuzu with an ayin? So the Gemara says, Shalinu. So they ask Bnei Yehuda, right? So you guys are so meticulous in your lashon. So now tell us, is it aver? Is it aver aleph? Is it aver ayin? Is it akuzu aleph? Akuzu ayin? Va'amrilei, ika detani ma'avrin, v'ika detani ma'avrin, ika detani akuzu. Thank you, Bnei Yehuda. Right? So essentially, Rabbi Yehuda, no, they didn't. So what they're saying is, they're both legitimate. So Rabbi Yehuda, there are different versions, but what Bnei Yehuda at least have solidified for us is, neither of them are wrong. Okay, so now we'll have to see which one we use, but both are correct. Bnei Yehuda, daiki lishne mahi. So we'll say, now the Gemara says, can we get some examples of how exactly in Yehuda they were careful with their words? Listen to this. There was a certain man from Yehuda who had a talis, a cloak to sell. So I asked him, tell me, what color is the talis you're selling? The talis I'm selling is the color of beets while they are still attached to the ground. So we'll say, beets that are still attached to the ground are what? Are green. Now, the Hebrew word for green is what? Is yarok. Now, the interesting part is, what's confusing about the color yarok is, sometimes yarok means green, and sometimes yarok means yellow. Interestingly enough. So therefore, this Bnei Yehuda, if you would have just said it's yarok, then what? Then people could have possibly confused and said maybe it was yellow. So therefore, what he did was, he said, it's kitradin ale adama. It's like beets on the ground, while they're still attached to the ground. So therefore, he gave a clear understanding that the cloak itself is green. Okay? Bnei Galil was just an example of how a person was very careful with his wording. Bnei Galil, delo daki lishnamai. So give me an example of the people in the Galil who were not careful with their lashon. Disanya. Dahu bar Galila, Dabaka Azil. There was a certain bar Galila who was traveling. Amaluhu, Leman Amr, Leman Amr. So he said, who has an Amr? Who has an Amr? So the Gemara says, Amruli Galila Shota. They said to him, you foolish Galilean, what are you saying? Now, Rabbi Yossi, they understood when he says, who has an Amr? Who has an Amr? He was speaking quickly, and he was trying to say, who has a Chamar? Who has a Chamar? So right, he was trying to buy a Chamar. So they said to him, what do you want? Listen to this. Chamar lemirkov? Do you want a chamar, a donkey to ride on? A chamor? O chamar lemishte? Or do you want chamar? Do you want wine to drink? Amar lemilbash? Do you want amar? Are you really saying amar, which is wool to wear? O amar leiskasa? Or are you looking for a sheep to slaughter? So it was like, The point that they're saying over here is apparently the people from Galil were just not careful about how they spoke. I want to say, again, I want to be careful. When we hear this about careful about not careful how they spoke with you about Lashon Hara. This is not Lashon Hara. This is not bad speech. It's just a question of how particular you are with your word usages. In Yehuda, they are very careful to always speak clearly in all areas of life. In the Galil, apparently not. All right. Hai Issa, Debaya Lenema La Chaverta. So you're supposed to listen to this. There was a woman who wanted to invite her friend Ta de Uchlich Chalba. She wanted to invite her friend, this is a good chavera, she wanted to come and eat some fat with me. They both say, that's not like a euphemism. She literally was invited, you know, you invite your friend over for some schmaltz. You know, come over for some schmaltz. Right? So come and eat schmaltz with me. Amra le, so she said to her, so the way she phrased the invitation was, Shalchusi, or Shaluchti, Shaluchti means my friend, Tuchlich Libei. I will say, Tuchlich Libei literally means she wanted to be able to say, Tuchlich Chalba, come and eat fat with me. The way she said it to everyone was, Tuchlich Libei, Tuchla Lavia. A Lavia, I will say, is a Lavi. A Lavi is a lion. So the way it came out was, a lion should eat you. Right? A lion should, so from an invitation to come over and share some schmaltz, it became a lion should eat you. All right. I'm sorry, just be careful. This is what, the point Gemara is making over here, I will say, So there's a particular woman that came before judges. Now she had a particular case that she needed to be adjudicated. Amrale Mari Kisi Tifla Haviously the Ganvuch Min the Kada Havos the Hishadrule Iluyach Lomati Kar Ich Arara. So I'll say what she wanted to say was, I had a particular board that was stolen from me. But the way she said it ended up becoming a ridiculous sentence. So if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi is Mara Kiri, Verot Salam Ar Kiri V'huadin Adon, V'amar Kiri V'avdi. So what she wanted to say was like a Kiri with a Kuf, which I guess would be vocalized a different way, which would be my master. But she ended up saying Kiri, which means Eved, my servants. So she came before Amrali Mara Kiri, my masters, my servants. Tiflas Havisli, she wanted to say Tavla, she wanted to say board. But she ended up saying tifla, which meant a korah, a beam. V'ganvuch min, literally she wanted to say it was stolen from me, but the way she articulated it made it sound like it was stolen from you. So v'kadu havis, dechi shadru iluya, lomati karech ha'ara. And she wanted to say that it was a board that could be hung very high on the wall. The way she ended up articulating it is, and the board was so high that if you were to be hanged from it, your feet would be dangling. So the point is over here, because she was not meticulous with these words, she ended up saying a nonsensical sentence. Fine. I'm so debay Rebbe. I'm also listen to this. Rebbe's maidservant. I will say, there's a lot of written about Rebbe's maidservant, who apparently was a very righteous woman. But listen to this. So very often she wanted to, so we'll say, you know, sometimes you have to say something to someone which is not a pasha thing to say, but you need to say it. So you have to phrase it in the right way. So listen to how this wise woman now used to phrase these things. So kimat, so she would say, so b'lashon chachma amra hacha. So when she wanted the students of Rebbe to go home, what she would say was the following. Nakfis bekad yidun. The ladle is hitting the bottom of the pot. So what does it mean if the ladle is hitting the bottom of the pot? Supper's over. Right? Supper's over. Now, let's say, I have to see she's referring over here to the ladle in the wine barrel. Right? the ladle is skipping about. There's no more wine. Oh, no more wine. Time to go home. Right? Nishra likineon. It's time for the eagles to go back to their nest. But when she wanted the students to say, Hava Amrilu, she would say to them, Ya'adi Basar Chaverta Minei, we'll go ahead and we'll bring another barrel for this friend, the Tiskapi Alei Bekat, and the ladle will float in the barrel, Ki'ilfa Da'azla Biyama, like a boat floats in the water. So again, when she wanted them to say, she would say, we're going to go ahead and open up another barrel, and the ladle will float in the barrel like a boat in the sea, i.e., plenty of wine, make yourself comfortable. Rabbi Yossi Bar Asyon, when Rabbi Yossi Bar Asya used to want to use, so this is another example of where sometimes people used to speak in cryptic fashions because they didn't necessarily want everyone to understand what they were saying. So he would say, Amar asu lishor b'mishpat b'tor miskan. Make for me literally an ox in mishpat b'tor miskan. In the mountain of Miskan, now Rashi understood somehow, people understood what he was saying. What he was really asking for was a pile of turnips with mustard. Now, how exactly people understood what he was saying, not sure, but nevertheless, apparently the merchant understood what he was asking for. Fine. And when he would ask regarding lodging, so say if he was traveling and he wanted to know about the quality of service in a particular inn, Amar Hachi would say the following: Gavar pum din chai, is the mouth of this man alive? Mazutova yesh, what good does he have? So Bosai, apparently in this situation, he didn't want to ask explicitly, is the inn a nice place? Is the owner of the inn a charitable guy? So he would ask in almost like a cryptic fashion, is the mouth of this person alive? Right? So meaning, is he go ahead and gonna feed us well? Is he gonna take care of us well? Matova yesh, is there good in this place? Rabbi Avo, Kevin Mishtai Beloshon Chachma, when Rabbi Avo would use this Lashon Chachma, this type of cryptic wording, Amar Hachi, this is what he would say, Asrigu lepechamim, make the coals glow like esrogim, give the coals a reddish hue like an esrog, Arkiu lezahavim, spread out the golden ones, Va'asuli shnei migidi ba'alotav, and give me two of the things that tell about the night. That's reference to two roosters. Iga da Amri, others say, V'ya'asuli bahen shnei magidin ba'alata. Others say what he was actually asking for was, make for me two magidi, two of the things that talk about the night. So he would actually be saying, roast for me two roosters. Okay? Omri Rabban Rabbi Avo, Hatzpinenu. What? Okay. So, Omri Rabban, is my time up? So listen to this. The rabbis once came to Rabbi Avo and they said, where is Rabbi Eli hiding? Where is Rabbi Eli hiding? So Amr Lahen, so he said to them, now this is Rabbi Avo responding back to the rabbis, where is Rabbi Eli? Alot Benara Aharonis. He is rejoicing with a girl from an Aharonic family. Acharonis, this is his latest wife. Ironis, she's very vivacious. Vehin irasu, and she kept him up all night. So what he's saying is apparently Rabbi Eloi had just gotten remarried. That's what it seems to be like by Acharonis. He had just gotten remarried. And you have over here Rabbi, and you have Rabbi Avo telling the rabbis he got married. Last night was his wedding night, and he's still sleeping. Amri la Isha, some say that it literally refers to a wife, but Amri la Masechta, and some say that it refers to Masechta of Gemara. And what he was responding over here is that Rabbi Avo apparently was up all night learning. Amri la Rabbi Eloi, Hitzpenenu Heichan Rabbi Avo Tzafon, where is Rabbi Avo hiding? Amri la Hen, Nisya'itz B'machtir, he received counsel from the one who crowns, V'Higniv and Limipi Boshes, and he has gone south to Limipi Boshes. Which is another way of saying that Rabosai, that Rabbi Avo got permission from the Reish Galusa to go ahead and go south. Look at Rashi over here. He says over here, Bemachtir, Nisayitz Bemachtir, not all Rishus, I'm sorry, not from the Reish Galusa, from the Nasi. He got Rishus from the Nasi, and he went south to learn from Mipi Boshes. Now, who's Mipi Boshes? Mipi Boshes was the Rebbe of David HaMelech. So Mipiboshes represents the Torah scholars. He got permission to go south and to learn from the great men in the south. All right. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya, Miyamai lo nitzchani adam chutz mi'isha tinok v'tinokes. So Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya says, in all of my days, no one ever got the best of me, except one time that a woman did, a child, which means a male child, a tinok, and a tinokes, and a female child. So three times in life, I was bested by another. And those three times is one of those times by a woman, by a young male child, and by a young female child. So the Gemara says, Isha Mahi, what was the case of the woman who bested Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya? Pamachas nisarachti itzlach sanyachos. One time, I was staying by a particular woman. I was just staying I was the guest of a particular woman. So on the first day she made for me beans, lentils, and I ate the whole thing. It was very good. I didn't leave over anything. On the second day she prepared for me food and I didn't leave over anything. On the third day she put too much salt in the beans. And what happens? When I tasted it, it was too salty, so I withdrew I didn't eat it. I'm really Rebbe b'nei ma'in chasoid. So she said to me, Rebbe, why aren't you eating today? Amarti lo kvar sa'arati mi ba'ol yom. He didn't want to tell her the food was too salty. So what did he say? Oh, I ate earlier. So she said to him, Amr li, Hayalachalim shoch yadecha minapas. So Rabbi, well, it doesn't make any sense because you washed already. Right? So if you washed already, then why did you sit down to wash if you weren't going to eat? So she caught on. Amr Elis, listen to this. She said to me, Rabbi, shemelo hinachta peah barishonim. Maybe you didn't leave over anything on your plate on the first 2 days. V'lokach amrucham nechum not say, eim sharin peah ba'alfis. We don't leave over, Rabbi said, peah literally means a corner. We don't leave anything over in the pot. Aval mishayrin peah bikara. But we always leave over on our plate. Rabbi said, what is this referring to? So we'll say the Mishnah brings down that in the laws of etiquette, what would end up happening is you were supposed to always leave over something on your plate that would be given to the shamsh, that would be given to the person who was the butler, the waiter, right? So apparently, what this woman did is she gave musr to Rabbi Shob ben Chananya, because Rabbi Shob ben Chananya didn't leave over anything on his plate the first 2 days. Instead of telling him, Rabbi, you did something wrong, what did she do? She made the food too salty. Because this way, again, he wouldn't eat anything, and she would have the opportunity to be able to tell him, Rabbi, I'm sorry, and in a very nuanced fashion, what you did wasn't right. You're really supposed to leave over a little something on your plate for the Shamus. And he was taken by this, and he realized she was absolutely right. Tinokes, my boss, another minute. Tinokes, my, what's the case of Tinokes? Was the case of the young girl. Pam achas haisi mahalich baderech. I'm sorry, this is a young boy. One time I was walking on the road. No, girl, excuse me, tinokes. What's the case of right mahi? Pam achas haisi mahalich baderech. One time I was walking on the road. V'haisa derech overes besoda. And there was a path that cut through someone's field. V'haisi mahalich ba. And I was going to take the path. Amrli tinokes achos. So a little girl came over to me and she said, Rebbe, lo sada hizu. Rebbe, is this not private property? Right, does the field not belong to someone? Amarti li lo derech kivusha hi. He said to her, young girl, look at the path. The path is very well worn. The fact that the path is very well worn is indicative of what? That this is a path used by the public. Amri li, the little girl said to me, yes, Rabbi, listim kamoscha kavshuha. Literally, thieves like you have trodden down the path. But the little girl was saying to the Rebbe, very nice. It's people like you who keep going through the field that trod down the path. But just because it's trodden upon doesn't what? Doesn't mean that it belongs to anyone other than the owner. And Rebbe realized again he was bested by this little girl. Tinok mahi, what's the case of the young boy? Pam achas haisi mahalich baderech. One time I was walking on the road, Rebbe Shua ben Chananya says, v'ra'isi tinok yoshev ha'parashas drachim. And I saw a young boy standing by the crossroads. V'amarti lo, I said to him, be'eza derech nelech le'ir, how could I get to the city? Amar li, so the little boy said to me, there are two paths, zuk tzara v'aruka, one path is short and long, v'zu aruko k'tzara, and one is long and short. V'halachti, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya, he says, okay, I took option A, v'halachti b'k'tzara v'aruka, I went on the path that is short and long. So what happens? V'kevan she'gati le'ir, once I got to the city, matzasi she'makifin oso ganosu pardesin. So this particular path led me to an area that was surrounded by fields and orchards. So what happened? I couldn't get through it. So v'chazarti l'achora, I had to go all the way back. Amarti lo b'ni, halo amarti li kitzara, my son, why did somebody think you told me this path was short? Amar li, so the little boy said, v'lo amarti l'cha aruga, Rebbe, did I not tell you that it was short and long? It was short, and that it's the quickest way to get to the city. But it's the longest. Why? Because you're going to have to come back to go all the way around. Nashaktiv al rosho. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya, he says, I kissed him on his head. V'amarti lo, and I said to him, Ashreichem Yisrael, praiseworthy are you Jewish people. Shekulam chachamim. Ah, we're all so smart, right? Everyone's chacham. Everyone's a chacham. Gidolim atem, we are great people. Migdolchem v'ad kitanchem. There is greatness and wisdom to be found in the Jewish people, from the youngest all the way to the oldest. Right? We'll stop over here. Again, more beautiful I gotta tell tomorrow in your session.